Hey, what's up? This is Kyle Schutt from The Sword, and you're listening to Sound Sessions.
Welcome back to another episode of Sound Sessions. I am Kevin, and I am absolutely thrilled to be joined by Kyle Schutt, guitarist for one of my favorite bands, The Sword. Kyle, thank you so much for joining us today.
What's up, man? How you doing?
Doing well. So I know about maybe last summer you guys put out High Country, and it seems maybe you guys took a bit of a different approach with High Country.
Yeah, I guess you could say that. Each of our albums is a little bit different, but this is the first time we had taken sort of like a year and a half off to just kind of relax and sort of take care of our personal lives before we kind of reconvened to write the record. And I think when we came back, it was we were kind of all in just like a different headspace. We kind of were all over the place inspiration-wise. And I think it was we just approached it differently, wrote like way more songs than we were used to writing, and decided to just approach the recording of each song differently than in the past. You know, usually we would have 10 songs ready to go, just jump the studio and just record exactly what we meant to. But this time we had 17 songs and we just went in the studio and just kind of playing around with different sounds and just going for something, you know, a little more interesting, I guess, to ourselves than just going in there and doing the same thing 10 times in a row.
Yeah, and talk about some of the different voices used. I know you kind of seem to have embraced the synthesizer a little more here and there. You had some horn come in and all that. That's kind of a different approach, it seems.
Yeah, it was just kind of, there was just no rules. That was kind of like the theme this time was just like, just do whatever. And just if it sounds cool, go with it. If, you know, it sucks, then we wanted something else. You know, it's just kind of no rules.
Yeah, was the theme. Absolutely. So this is your fifth full-length album, if I'm not mistaken. And plus you've had a few singles.
That's
here.
Right.
What do you guys do to stay fresh and you know, not get sick of what you're doing? I mean, I know it's an awesome thing that you're doing, but how do you stay fresh on it?
Actually, this time we tuned up from C standard. We tuned to E flat now.
Okay.
And played the whole record that way. And even live show, we play a lot of the old songs in E flat too.
Really?
And it was just that like livened everything up. We felt like on the last album cycle on Apocryphon, we did over 250 shows, and we kind of brought back every old song we had played in the past, with the very few exceptions. And at the point in our careers, we were just like, let's do something different, shake it up a little, just so it's more fun for us, you know, because as much as I love entertaining our fans and things like that, we have to, if we don't enjoy it, then nobody else is going to either.
Exactly.
So.
Exactly.
That's kind of like, we're having more fun than ever up there. I think that translates to the live.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's huge. You made brief mention about some influences and things like that. Do you have, I mean, having read some of your tweets and things like that, I know it seems like Prince, in the passing of Prince, was a big deal to you. Was he an influence on you, and were there some other unexpected influences out there for you?
Yeah, you know, Prince was a huge influence on me. I think we have a lot of influences people wouldn't necessarily think. But anyway, I mean, some of my favorite guitar riffs were Prince riffs, like the song Endorphin Machine off the Gold Experience, or Bambi off the self-titled record.
Sure.
I could go on and on, man. The guy was just a guitar maniac. And a lot of the licks that he could pull off were just a lot more of like, it's almost like a background vocal in a, coming out of a guitar, just like, ow, kind of thing, you know? it's well, way more of like a feel.
Yeah.
It is like a technically proficient solo, and I think I took a lot of influence from that. On the flip side of that, Brian May had a huge influence on me from Queen, you know? So he was kind of like technically perfect kind of like guitar player. So, you know, we drew a lot of different influences all over the map, even non-musical influences. I mean, the way I write music a lot of the times is I'll just kind of just try to get as chill as possible, just really zen out and listen to the universe and just kind of almost just listen, just play what I hear in my head. You know what I mean? Taking all like the books I've read and the video games I've played or the people I've met all over the world, just take all that noise in my head and just see what comes out. I just try to like, just really chill out and hear what the universe is telling me to do. So
yeah. And I think, go ahead.
Yeah. No.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, you know, being a musician myself, obviously not on a touring or professional level or anything like that, but I think it takes a special talent to be able to hear something in your head and then actually put it out onto the guitar or the bass or whatever. And so you're able to do that, huh?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I wouldn't say I'm like the best guitar player in the world or even close to it or anything. I just try to make the guitar do what I want it to.
Sure.
You know, I think that's like kind of something that I think a lot of people should kind of think about if they pick up an instrument. You know, just don't worry about so much just doing whatever the book tells you to do. Just, you know, just be you. You know, it's an extension of you, and it's going to come across if you let it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that does come across for you guys big time, whether it be in the lyrical content. That's something I wanted to touch on. I mean, you mentioned books. You mentioned some video games. I've seen stuff about comics with you guys. And I would even go as far to say to gamble, I guess, and bet that some of you guys may be Game of Thrones fans. Is there any truth to that?
Oh, sure. I thought you were going to say gamble fans. I love to gamble.
Gamble too?
I'm just playing. No, yeah. It's funny that you mentioned that. It's because back in like 99, 2000, whenever A Game of Thrones came out, I was a huge fan and told all my friends to read it. Nobody would read it. And I just kind of got sick of telling everybody to read it. And now, you know, like 16 years later, it's fucking all anyone can talk about. It's like, where were you back then?
Right.
But I can't really cop to the lyrical content just because I don't write the lyrics. JD writes 100% of those. But yeah, we are massive Game of Thrones fans. And we actually used to write songs about the shit back in the day. And
no,
like, whenever we heard that, we had a song in that HBO series, Big Love, back in the day. And so we already had an in with HBO, and then once we heard that Game of Thrones was in pre-production, we're like, hey, you got all these songs about the shit, or we can re-record any of them for you, or do an instrumental version, or whatever. They fucking, like, gave us no love, and now all of a sudden, fucking Mastodon dudes are all up their ass,
and
the Hold Steady was in the episode and shit. It's like, oh, come on,
yeah, the
man.
National.
I know, right? But whatever, you know, I can't put them all. But
what
we were there first.
What about video games and things like that? Are you a gamer yourself?
I am. I'm kind of taking a little break right now. I recently moved to Brooklyn and just kind of like threw a bunch of my stuff in storage. Didn't want to like move my entire life up here. But I threw my PS4 and my TV in storage just because I just wanted to kind of come up here and embrace the city a little bit. But I am a massive gaming fan. Just kind of like almost like the harder the better. Yeah. Sometimes those Dark Souls series, I started playing it back in Demon Souls kind of days, and I went through all four of them so far, including Bloodborne. But yeah, Dark Souls 3 just came out, and I'm not playing it right now, and it's kind of like, I'm like, who am I? Am I the same person I used to be? I'm just playing. I fucking love video games. It's a huge part of my life since I was a kid.
Yeah.
And massive influence in that.
I want to talk about, I was listening to Apocryphon. The first time I sat down and listened to it, I'm loving it, and it sounds like the Sword album, which is great, and you guys, you know, your riffs are always on point and everything, and then the last track comes on, and it happens to be my favorite ZZ Top song ever, Cheap Sunglasses, and you guys, you fucking nailed it. It's like, I never would have thought that your sound would have been able to capture a ZZ Top song like that, but it was so spot on. Now, did you guys decide to do that because you have the Texas roots, or what was the influence there?
Yeah, I mean, that's one aspect of it. We're massive ZZ Top fans, always have been. I mean, those first 6-7 records are just about as good as it gets. A lot of people don't even realize that. They think that they're just, you know, the Legs and...
Yeah.
And Sharp Dressed Man and stuff, which, you know, I love Afterburner and Recycler and all those albums too. But a lot of those first albums especially were, they were remastered in the 80s, and you can't get a version of it on CD that's the original track. So you have to actually go out and buy the old record that has the original drums on it instead of it being a drum machine. So if you can get your hands on those, that is some of the best rock and roll out there. And I've always said that the Sword, kind of being from Texas, we sort of fall somewhere halfway in between Pantera and ZZ Top. Anyway, we're just kind of like just a funky, you know, rock and roll kind of metal band. And also, in particular, that track on the Warp Riders tour, we played a lot of festivals in the U.S. and abroad. And we just, I don't know, back then especially, it was like, well, if you've got a 40-minute festival set and nobody really knows who you are out there, then the best way to get everybody shaking their ass and singing along is to play a fucking cover song, you know? And we were like, let's play Cheap Sunglasses, because it's like summer festivals. Everybody's got cheap sunglasses on. And I don't know. It was just, I wouldn't say it was a hit, but it was just, you know, it was something that everybody really responded to, and we had a great time playing it. And so when we were in the studio for making Apocryphon, we just decided, hey, well, we got an extra day here. Why don't we just scratch ZZ Top cut? And the label was gracious enough to pay the mechanical royalties for it. So we decided to go for it. Yeah.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, and it's such a cool jam. I mean, it's a great song. Now, have you guys ever had, I mean, I know you like toured with Metallica, and I'd love to hear about how that came about, but have you, did you get to meet them? Obviously, I'm sure you did. What about ZZ Top? I mean, has there been any starstruck moments for you guys?
No, we never met ZZ Top, but we are good friends with Metallica. We played over 100 shows with them all over the world. I mean, from Australia to fucking Turkey and everywhere in between.
Yeah.
Lars ended up being a huge fan of ours back in the day. I mean, like, he was one of our first fans, honestly. Back in 06, we heard he was a fan through, like, a Rolling Stone article.
Hmm.
And yeah, but you can't really take that seriously. You know, it's, you never know.
Sure.
Who's closest is saying what or whatever, and putting words in whose mouth or whatever. So we just kind of took it with a salt. And then we were in Toronto one night, and this guy, like, stumbles up to our van trailer, and he's like, hey, man, you guys a Sword? I'm like, yeah, what's up? He's like, oh, you're going to believe me, but I'm Sebastian Bach's brother. And I was like, yeah, you're right, I don't believe you. And he goes, no, but we were hanging out with Lars Ulrich the other night, and he just wouldn't shut up about you guys and kept playing your record. Like, he played it, like, 6 times, like, hanging out all night. And I was like, I really don't believe you now. But that's an odd coincidence, you know? So we started putting him on the guest list every night just as a joke. If he's such a fan, he'll probably show up to one of our shows, you know? And on that same tour, like, 2 or 3 weeks later in San Francisco, he showed up to our show.
No kidding.
At Slim's, and hung out all night. It was super nice. Just very gracious man. It was really cool to meet him, and didn't think anything of it really, because it was just, you know, sometimes you meet fucking famous people, and you know, that's it. You know, it was nice. But the next time we played there, he came out again and brought us back to his house, and we just, like, pounding bottles of tequila and just
nice.
Smoking tons of weed in his fucking living room. And we're like, he was like, we're gonna take you guys on tour. We're going to, like, go all over the world and everything. We're like, yeah, fucking right, guy. But, you know, it's, you know, what are you going to say? You know, you're just fucking partying and having time. But about 6 months later, they made the announcement for Death Magnetic and called us up and asked us if we wanted to go on a little 2-week, like, Eastern European tour with them. Which, you know, it was crazy at the time for us. And we had to cancel a tour because of that. All the promoters were super understanding, of course.
Hey,
and
we're going on tour with Metallica, sorry.
I know, right? Yeah, and it was a tank tour, and we did it. It was, like, places we'd never been. At that point in my life, it was, like, the biggest show I'd ever played every day in a row. So, like, we went from playing to 20,000 people to 30,000 people to 50,000 people. And then we ended up in Istanbul.
Wow.
Playing for like 65,000 people, and it was just nuts. You know, at that point in our career, it was like, what the hell's going on?
Yeah.
And that night, they were like, you guys did a great job. Do you want to play some more shows? And we're like, sure. You know, just give us a call. And they had us play the Ozfest that they curated in 2008. And then that day, they sat us down and said, hey, we want to give you guys the first of 3 slots for our Death Magnetic tour for as long as you want.
Holy cow.
Yeah, so it was, I mean, it was going to be like a 2.5-year-long tour. And we did it for about a year. We put 100 shows of them, partied in all corners of the world, did all kinds of things I'll never forget for the rest of my life. But about 100 shows in, I mean, you can only keep up with those guys for so long. You know, because they're flying everywhere and, you know, like that, and kind of have cars and stuff. But when you're in a bus or just trying to keep up with a jet like that, it takes a lot out of you. And our personal lives just were a wreck at the end of it all. And we had to bid farewell to the tour, but we did make them promise to take us to Australia because we'd never been and we always want to go. But they said they weren't going to Australia for another year and a half. We're like, oh my God, like we can't tour with you anymore. We had to take a break. But when it came time to play Australia, they called us up and made good on their promise.
Wow.
And brought us back there. So they're really, really good friends of ours, and you're never going to meet a more generous rock and roll band as big as they are.
That's pretty cool, man. I mean,
yeah,
it just blows your mind that, you know, the way your music can reach people, next thing you know, you're touring with Metallica. Just incredible.
You know, at that time, especially for us too, it was like we went from basically being like a little punk rock band on Red River in Austin, Texas, and then within 2 years, we were on tour with Metallica. I mean, it was fucking crazy.
That is crazy. I mean, yeah. I feel like there's something to be said too about, I mean, I guess you could say the same thing for Metallica, even from what you tell me, but yeah, you guys are touring the world and playing music and having all these fans and yada yada, but you just seem like a regular guy. And you, I mean, maybe you're just doing your dream, but you seem like a regular guy. I mean, that's really cool, man.
Yeah, I mean, those guys are regular guys too. I mean, all the best ones really are just regular guys.
Yeah.
I think the days of being larger than life are over. I don't think anybody's interested in really having anything to do with anyone like that anyway anymore.
Right.
If you're if, you know, if not, coming from my point of view, especially, like, I don't know, if you're some pompous fucking rock and roll rock star dickhead, I'm really not going to want to hang out with you or listen to your music or anything, but I don't know. It's, you know.
Yeah.
There's always exceptions, I guess.
So you guys are this pro band, and you're playing Istanbul for 65,000 people, but being a musician myself, I know at times there are gear issues or pedal issues or mishaps. Can you think of any time where you've had some mishaps on stage where things kind of go haywire?
Oh, yeah, totally. I used to have the fucking piece of shit pedal. It was a Boss Harmonist. It's basically a one-trick pony, and it does that one trick really well.
Yeah.
But whenever the battery runs low, it starts to clip the signal out whenever it chooses, and it'll bring it back in whenever it chooses
until
the battery dies. And you can't plug a normal 9-volt adapter into it because you have this special, like, 18-volt adapter for it, and, like, my Voodoo power on my pedal board, you know, just wouldn't support it, so I had to have a 9-volt in it at all times. So we're on stage in, like, I think it was Adelaide at this festival, like, we're playing to, like, 20,000 people, and the fucking thing starts to just short out on
me,
at its whim, you know, and I couldn't tell what the hell the problem was, and I don't know, I mean, when you're in the middle of a performance, that sometimes your adrenaline gets pumped, and then you just lose your shit and pick up your pedal board and throw it halfway across the stage.
Is that what you did?
You know, but it's, you know, sometimes shit happens. I don't know. I try not to do shit like that anymore because the crew doesn't know what's going on. They just get a maniac up there throwing shit. But, you know, yeah, sometimes your pedals fuck up on your, all it takes is one shitty cable to just ruin your entire fucking mood, you know? So, you just gotta try to deal with it like a professional. I'm not always the best at doing that, but, you know, that's what you're supposed to do anyway.
Yeah, it's part of the game, I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So what's next for the Sword?
We actually are about to do the fourth American leg of our High Country tour. After that, we're taking the summer off because I'm going to fucking Europe again and playing more festivals and just that. I'm just over that whole fucking game. We're really not as big in Europe as people like to say we are sometimes. And it's just after a while, it's like, you want to go back and get in a shitty bus and drive and play these fucking same festivals in the middle of a field and do all over again. And we're just not into that this year. So I'm going to take summer off, and then we've got a big tour coming up in September and October that I can't say what it is yet, but that's coming up. So keep an eye out for that. And we also have an acoustic version of High Country that we recorded coming out on September 9th.
Oh, I can say
that. So, yeah, we actually recorded the songs, like, right after we were done in the studio with High Country. We just, I don't know, I guess the juices were still flowing, so we just decided to, it started with, like, two ideas that I had. I want to do an acoustic cover of the song Seriously Mysterious on the record, which is like a synth pop sort of song with, like, some funky guitar solos on it that sounds a lot like Prince. I don't know, you can kind of hear my Prince influence there if you want to think about it that way. But so I did the acoustic version of that, and then I was like, well, you know, that was cool, maybe I should do another acoustic version, so like the B-side, if we wanted to make a single out of it. And so I did Empty Temple, and then I just kind of kept going. I was like, I bet I could do High Country, or I bet I could do Dream Thieves, I bet I could do this, and I don't know, I just kind of started tearing through them all, and I got about 10 deep before I lost inspiration. And We tried a couple alternative versions of a few of the other songs, and it wasn't working out because we wanted to do every single song a different way. And after a while, it was just like too much. I just felt like it wasn't going to be as good. So we stuck with the 10 that I thought were awesome. And yeah, that's going to come out September 9th. We're going to call it Low Country.
Ah, I like that. That's a good thing to look forward to. So in your entire musical career, what would you think you and the band, or just you, are most proud of?
I'm really proud of the last record that we did, High Country. I felt like it was one of those records that kind of propelled us from being some, you know, down-tuned little kind of, I don't know what you would call, stoner metal band, just kind of brought us into the realm of just being a rock band. And we're going to be able to, I think, continue to build on that foundation. We're one of the lucky ones as far as being able to, like, have made records back when MTV still played videos, and you were still able to, like, get on a support tour, like an arena tour, like for Metallica and stuff like that. And it just seems like those days are kind of behind us all. I don't really know if they're ever going to come back, but I'm just proud that we've been able to just always call our own shots. You know, we've never done anything anyone else wanted us to. We've always done exactly what we wanted to, exactly the way we wanted to do it. And not a lot of bands can say that.
Yeah, absolutely.
These days, especially. And I don't mean to sound crass, but I like to tell people, like, we never sucked any dicks. We never had to suck one dick.
That's the headline right there.
Where we're going.
That's
yeah, right.
The quote. So when you come to Chicago, is there any hot spots you have to hit, like whether it be a music shop or a restaurant or anything like that?
Me and the boys, we like to go to Chicago Music Exchange, of course.
That's the spot. That's
just
the spot.
You know, the it depends on where you're playing, really. Like Talia Hall, they really take care of you. There's the called the Sex downstairs. They
so
really
good.
Hook it up in the kitchen and everything.
Oh,
whenever you play the Metro, you got to go have a Chicago dog across the street at Wrigley Dog or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, whenever you play Double Door. What do I do down at Double Door? There's like a Mexican food place around. I can't remember what it's called.
Big Star?
No, it's like it starts with the F or something, like Feria or
Frontera. I don't know. I'm not.
It's
Wicker Park,
man.
Six Corners area. There's a bunch over there.
Yeah. But I don't know. Just stuff like that. We always used to party at the. Is it the Exit?
What was that?
We used to party at the Exit all the time, but I haven't been there in years. Isn't that what it's called?
Exit. Yeah, that's still around. The little,
Yeah, totally. We used to party there all the time. It'd be like bondage night. There'd be like some dude chained to a fence you could throw nickels at and shit. I don't know. It was just like a fucking weird bar. I used to love hanging out there.
That's hilarious. before we let you go, Kyle, again, we really appreciate you jumping on with us. For any up-and-coming bands or you know, young kids picking up the guitar, do you have any tips?
Yeah, quit. I'm just kidding.
So Chris.
No, just be yourself, man. I honestly don't know what motivation there would be for a kid to want to like pick up the guitar and just give up your whole life and hit the road playing music other than just the adventure of it, you know. So if as long as you don't, you know, have dollar signs in your eyes and you just want to see the world, a really good way to do that is to pick up the guitar and to get together with your best friends and write some songs and just leave your life behind for a little while. You'll gain a lot from it. As far as playing music is concerned, just be yourself. You know, don't try to be like anybody else or do what anybody else did, or don't obsess over whatever gear some dude played or anything. Just take whatever you have and make it sound as good as you can, and just be yourself.
Well put. Kyle, again, thank you so much for joining us. High Country is out now. Look out this summer for Low Country, and hopefully we'll catch you when you guys are in town next. Thanks so much, Kyle.
Hell yeah, sounds good, man. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Can't get enough of Sound Sessions? Like our Facebook page. Follow us on Twitter @SoundSeshPod and check us out on Instagram @SoundSessionsWGN.